Hey everybody, and welcome to Reason Town. Today we're going to talk about ReasonConf, and I've got some special guests here, which I will introduce in a moment, just after I say that our hosting is sponsored by TylerMcGinnis.com, the linear, course-based approach to learning web technologies. Big thanks to Tyler, and if you want to learn some sweet stuff, go check out TylerMcGinnis.com. The link is in the show notes. Now I want to introduce Patrick Stopfer. Did I say that right, Patrick?
Yeah, you did. Hello.
Woo! And Nick Graff.
Yep.
Hello. I didn't quite say that right. Nick Graff. I had said the American A, even though I said
good.
I wasn't going to say it. Oh, thanks.
Just so think about GraphQL without the QL.
GraphQL. And here in spirit, but not actually in voice, is Andrei Okunechnikov. How did I do?
Perfect.
Okunechnikov. And he was detained for family reasons, wasn't able to make the show, but definitely wanted to be here contributing. So thanks to Andrei, even though he wasn't able to be here. So Patrick and Nick, give us a very short... Well, first, I'll just say that you three, Patrick, Nick, and Andrei, you are all co-organizers of the Reason Conf in Europe, the Reason Conf Austria 2017 that just recently ended. And so we're going to talk about that on the show today. So first things first, let's start with Patrick. Patrick and Nick, why don't you two give us like a 2-minute background on yourselves each so we can get an impression about where you're from, you know, what you're doing, etc.
Ah, I will give it a try. So I'm currently a freelancer who's located in Vienna. And I've been like most of my open source time, I've been investing a lot of time in the Flow ecosystem. And the funny thing is that you are also from the Flow ecosystem, kind of. And I was like super surprised when I see your nickname everywhere where I'm going. Like you have been there
right.
Already.
We met in the Flow ecosystem like three years ago, right? Isn't that?
Yeah, I can remember when Flow typed was not even a thing. So I was also like trying to contribute to this project and reviewing library definitions and whatnot. In my professional time, I was mostly working for a company called Amazio. It's like one of my clients. They build a lot of infrastructure, cloud infrastructure, and they host everything and build some amazing tools, which are all open source. Which is called Lagoon. Right now I'm also working for a client called Next Journal, who are building kind of like the medium of scientific articles, and I'm integrating OCaml in their platform. So, and also Reason, of course. So you can use OCaml and Reason to build articles and compute stuff and calculate big data and whatnot.
How interesting. That's great. So how did you learn about Reason? How did you get into Reason?
I was when I was working like in the Flow ecosystem, and I was like discovering all the things you can do with functional programming, I got a little bit excited with it and used a lot of functional programming paradigms in JavaScript. But I always thought that there was something lacking, some kind of like, it was very hard to do like polymorphic typing with Ramda, and I was looking out for some alternatives. And then, yeah, like Nick and I, we also looked into Elm, and we were really excited about it. But then there was a few things which I didn't like. Most of it was that it was not running a node in the beginning, and I wanted to do some server stuff as well. And after a while, we founded our own meetup group later, and yeah, we will talk about this a little bit later.
Okay, great.
I guess. Yeah.
Nick, your turn. Let's hear your backstory.
So a couple of years ago, started as a software engineer, did full stack, Python backends, and then Dart, Backbone and Dart in the front end. And then I moved, became a freelancer, I moved more and more to front end stuff. And I was actually on the verge of like, I was using Angular 1 at the time, and I was on the verge of like, okay, I'm going to go into management. Because it's so hard, and I felt like there's not much more I can do. And then I started to get in touch with React, and completely blew my mind, and I got really, really excited about front-end development, and basically did a deep dive there. And I don't know, it was, I think, 2 years ago, Sander Spies from the Netherlands, he talked about Reason. So that was really early on for Reason at a conference, ReactNL. And he explained basically like the way like why React got was so exciting for me, because suddenly you could use immutable data structures in the front end and a lot more functional programming, and they all made so much more sense and became sane compared to this big Angular projects that we had before that were every time we changed something we broke it in two other places and React in this case like it made it possible that we can actually set up something that when we changed something we didn't break it somewhere else. And then Sander explained it to me like, hey, you can React was basically coming from one side, but then we only can go so far, and I totally saw this point. And the other way is like, okay, let's take a functional programming language like OCaml, and we come from the other side. And now Reason React is like this thing that sits right in between for front-end development, where you have the good parts coming from React from the one side, from the JavaScript side, and the good parts coming from OCaml with the syntax, immutability by default, and so on. And that's how I kind of got into Reason.
Nice. So then there's a big step between just getting into Reason and doing a whole conference, because we know how much work that is. So I understand that before doing a conference, you organized a meetup together. Is that right?
Yeah.
And both of you are, please, both of you can contribute to the conversation
totally.
Now.
Patrick, you want to tell the story?
I'm not sure if I remember it correctly, but I was really like, I know that I dabbled into Reason like at the Reactive Conf like 2 years ago, and we're actually sitting like after the conference. So Sean Grove was talking about it, and I was really excited. This was actually the point which ignited this whole thing, where I was like sitting in the hotel room, me and Nick, and then we tried to install the tool chain, but it didn't work out properly, and it was like super slow. But after a while, they released new versions which were faster, and then we are like, okay, we should really like we should do it. We should find a group of people who are willing to invest some time, trying it out in like a mob programming kind of way. Just get together and try to build something in Reason React. Kind of like this. I'm not sure if it's like I think it was like this.
I think, I mean, I really liked this session. So we had this, we had two different, we have the React Vienna meetup where we also both co-organizers since a long time, more than 2 years. Reason was a bit different though, because we did these meetups where we had presentations now and then, I would say the more interesting stuff was actually these hack sessions where we had just people come together, and usually they are smaller, just because the ecosystem is smaller for once, but also how we explain it on the meetup page. You actually come here and you code together. I don't know, maybe it scares off some people, but on the other hand, it was some really, really productive sessions where get hands-on and you learn something. It's not like you watch a talk for 30 minutes and you get really inspired and then you get home and the next day you do your day job and you can try out all that cool stuff. You actually, in these hack sessions, we just say like, cool, new version of Reason React. It looks completely different. Let's check it out. And we worked on this tic-tac-toe game for quite some time and ran through some of the iterations that Reason and Reason React actually did.
So when you did that, did you do it as a whole meetup together? Like you would do a mob programming session and all of you would work on the same game? Is that how that worked?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes people spin out and work as groups of two or three. They go to another table and work on other stuff. But yeah, mostly it was like mob programming.
And how many attendees were there typically?
10, usually.
Okay.
10,
yeah, something like this.
Yeah.
And so each time you met up, was it like, I know that I've been to some of the Elm meetups in San Francisco, and they were not at all like our Elm meetups in Utah, because in Elm meetups in Utah, a lot of people have families to get home to and go to bed. But in San Francisco, the Elm meetups would go until 2 or 3 a.m., and people would be hacking that whole time. Kind of what was the time schedule for you guys looking like?
It was mostly like we started around 6, 7 p.m., and then it went until 10, I would say. So it was not too long into the night. But then usually we went for a beer, and it kind of continued there.
Okay.
So it's not so much about like then you're not so hands-on anymore, but then you talk about philosophy of the language and so on and so forth, and also a lot of exchange happening there.
Yeah, that's where you form friendships that form businesses and initiatives later on, right? Is the socializing time.
Yeah, totally.
That's really interesting. Yeah. Okay, so there was at some point where you said, hey, this Reason Vienna is working out really well. Let's do a Reason conference. I mean, tell me how that went. What was that decision-making process like?
I think, if I remember correctly, the driving force was Patrick here. Maybe he can talk more about it.
Yeah, I mean, I was very idealistic with this whole thing. In the beginning, I was thinking, why is there no proper event where I can, like... So my idea was, how can I get a huge group of people together, getting, like, bootstrapped with all the knowledge they need, and then fill them up with some inspiration, kind of, and then let them hack away, because most of the people are... like they can learn it in one day, but they never take the time to block like one day. And with Reason Vienna, I always felt like, okay, we have 2 to 3 hours, and every time we try to get back to where we left off or where we stopped last time, and it was really frustrating because then people messed up their setup again, and we needed to spend some time setting up their machines again, and people got sidetracked in some things they forgot the last time. So I wanted to have something where we can really bootstrap a huge amount of people. And I was also like lurking in the Discord and all the community channels we had, and also in the OCaml discuss, and I saw that there's a lot of people just waiting for the moment where everyone is just getting to one place and building something great and get to know each other. Because a lot of people have been in a Discord channel and they have been talking to each other, but they never had a chance to gather and just talk about it in person.
Right.
And then I was, then we had this huge discussion on how conferences are getting bigger and bigger, and like here in our region, Vienna and other countries next to it, next to Austria, and I was always wondering why are there not like smaller communities where you have like 120 to 150 people, because then it's much easier to interact with each other and have a nice experience. And we saw this with other conferences in Austria as well, like in the other end of Austria, in Vorarlberg, where there was this very small conference for JavaScript developers, and they had like 120 people there, and I was like, this is great, this is like the best conference I've ever been. And I think a huge problem was just the size of a conference. So I wanted to have a small conference, and I wanted to have it very specific about Reason. And this was the thing where I just went to Nick and say, okay, we need to start something. We need to make it 3 days. I was really crazy. I was, yeah, we need to make it 3 days. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense. And the reaction of Nick was kind of like, yeah, let's do this. That's what, wow. That's what I really liked. He's not like, yeah, you're sure? But he was saying, no, we can do this.
So can you tell me then a little bit about the actual legwork of getting a conference set up? Because I mean, I've got friends who do this too, and I understand that there's a lot of personal risk that goes into it, a lot of work that goes into finding a venue, committing resources, getting, you know, putting out the CFP and the ticket sales and stuff. So tell me a little bit about how you got the resources to do this on the side, and was it super scary? Did you find a nice way to do it, kind of hack the system? Tell me more.
I think the most, or like at least for us, a very important kickoff point was in this really kind of like shady pizzeria where we are. We had this meetup in Vienna where Jared, Cristiano from the React core team and Sean Grove, they all were at the meetup because a conference was nearby. They could come out to our meetup and speak about it and so on. And we basically proposed the idea to Cristiano, who is from the recent core team, and he liked it. Then that was like for us really important because we didn't want to do anything if not the core team is involved. And yeah, because I think it's great to have to be aligned just like that. And and they really liked the idea, so that was really important. And then the next steps were basically like setting up values for us and mission and so on. And as Patrick mentioned, like it was clear it shouldn't grow too big because we had bad experiences with that. We wanted to do things like from this the meetups we learned, hands-on is way more important. So initially we set up the conference worked in a way that the first day was only workshops and everyone who bought a ticket was able to attend the workshops. The second day was full conference day and the third day was hackathon and tours in Vienna. So everyone could attend the workshop, and that was really important to us to get all the people on at least somewhat the same page, that everyone has at least used and tried Reason. And I think that worked really well, and that was one of our values. And the other values are important thing to us was to actually bring all the people who seen and talked to each other on Discord, bring in the same room and see what we can do with that. And I think that also worked well. Yeah, and then it's a ton of, I don't know, but by running through the meetups, we had a lot of experience. I mean, our biggest meetups were 120 people or so, 130. So we have seen quite a huge amount of people already, and that built up from like 20 to 30, 40, then you keep it at that point. And they get experience how to deal with things. You get less stressed over time if you do this more and more often. And I think that was a really important factor to actually execute, because you have to take care of meetup. You get a rough feeling for like what catering costs, what are the rules, like legal stuff you have to take care of and so on. But I think we underestimated the amount of work. And I actually tracked it. For me, it was roughly about 120 hours total. Wow. Where every second was just focusing on some detail of ReasonCon for organizing something and so on. That was spread over 4 or 5 months or so, but still, sure. it's still quite an effort. Yeah, and then you just do it. We created a task list, and we ask people who do event management, like, what do we need? What are we forgetting? And edit stuff there, and then just worked off one by one. And I think, I still have it on my next up to do's. We want to extract all our lessons learned and to do's, and basically create a GitHub repo for anyone who wants to do another ReasonConf in the US, maybe or so.
That'd be awesome.
Hey, this is our playbook. And even for us, I think we still want to do, or we're pretty certain about doing one next year again, would be pretty cool. But then basically for us have a playbook, but even for everyone else, this is a playbook for how to do a recent conf, and that we think it worked well. Feel free to take it, modify it, PR against it.
You know what you could do is you could build a conference standard, like an open conference standard, with RFCs and everything like that, and then people could just implement the standard and put on a conference that implements the open conference standard. There you go. Just like use it. The open source model.
That's
really cool.
Totally.
Actually, that's super helpful, because for a new person who's never organized like that before, there's so much that, I mean, like I said, I have friends who organize conferences, and I had no concept before being friends with them that, I mean, the like a huge part of putting on the conference is just finding a venue and putting a down payment on the venue, kind of thing, to make sure you have enough space with a good projector and good Wi-Fi for people. So, like, how did you solve those problems with the Wi-Fi and the venue and stuff?
That was actually, in our case, we got kind of lucky. Maybe it's, but everyone from the venues, I mean, for once, the big hall or the big conference room was at the Technical University, and they allow you to pay later on. And also wow. the co-working space we were in, they also said, like, yeah, you can pay afterwards.
That's awesome.
And that clearly helps. But I think the point where we were the most nervous was before selling any tickets, because we weren't absolutely not sure, like, how big is the community, how many people would really come. And yeah, it was actually intense discussion. Should we really do this? And then we start ticket sales. We went for lunch. And 10 minutes later, we sold 9 tickets. And that got us some already a leeway to pay for some flights and so on. And Patrick, who was the most positive of us, he was definitely right.
Yeah. So, yeah, because you said it before with the pizzeria and everything. Of course, this was like the greater concept we had when we started this whole thing with the 3 days and whatnot. But without like Cristiano telling us, we said, okay, maybe there will be 100 people or something. And Cristiano said, like, no, there will be more. And I felt so, I got such a confidence boost that, okay, if the core team of Reason is like, so supportive and, trying to make this happen and giving us advice on things and offering us help if we need it. This was, yeah, without that, it would have probably not happened. So it's very important. And after that, like talking to people and talking to people who have a little bit more insights in the community, I was totally sure that we will sell at least the early bird tickets in the first month or something. I don't know why, but I was really confident.
It was just a couple of days and we sold 40 tickets, and that was amazing. Wow. Yeah.
So how many tickets did you sell completely to sell out? You did sell out the conference, right?
Yeah. So it was 166 people at the conference.
That's total. Great.
Yeah. And
wow.
I think, let me pull out the stats. We did some stats for sponsors. Sponsors was also a very interesting thing because actually, for example, Accenture came to us. There's an innovations department in there, and they used Reason for an enterprise project. Or like they have enterprise customers, and there was an internal app the customer told them to build, and they said, like, yeah, okay, it's not super critical. So we're going to use Reason. Are you fine with that? And they said, yeah, sure. And then they came to us and said, like, hey, there are these big conferences, but I think our money is more well spent if we invested in ReasonConf. And that was, yeah, super
That's
helpful.
Awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think we got lucky in some cases, definitely. but yeah, let me quickly, where is it? Stats. I can give you some stats. Oh no, I have to find them.
I will
tell you in a minute. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was also very funny with the other sponsors. So for instance, I hesitated contacting Chain Street in the beginning because I wanted to be sure that we have something valuable for them to offer. And also I wanted to reach out to OCaml Labs. Maybe they would have been interested as well. And I reached out to them way too late. And I was writing to Yaron Minsky, the head of technology at Chain Street, and his reply was, why didn't you write us a little bit earlier so we can react on that? And I was feeling so sorry. And then he was like replying again, okay, we will give you the catering sponsor, and that's it. Very uncomplicated, very, very nice. I really love the cooperation with all our sponsors.
So in the end, I mean, I don't want you to share any private numbers here, but I think it's interesting for people who might be listening and want to do something similar in their own area. Was this a profitable enough thing for you guys that it was worth your time? I mean, did you end up walking away with enough compensation that it was worth 120 hours you put in, each of you personally, for example?
So this whole event was planned to be a not-for-profit event, and we also had a goal that we raise some money so we can spend it on open source projects. So this whole thing was planned to be contributed back to the community. This was very important to us because otherwise it wouldn't have worked. If it's like a profit event, of course, it's a different way. Like, it's just different how people approach to a conference. And everyone was helping together. Everyone was contributing. So what we did is we have some leftover money, luckily. And we are spending it on future things, what we wanted to talk about in a minute, I think, because it's already getting quite late. But we have something in the pipeline, and we wanted to use that money to contribute back to the community.
Wow, that's awesome. So this was all donation. I mean, in the sense that you guys just donated a lot of time to make this as a thing for the community, the good of the community.
Yeah.
Wow, I mean, way to go. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. I think that's also one thing. I mean, we did this meetups over the last couple of years, and I think I don't know, we for me, coding is only one part. Obviously, like, I really enjoy coding, and especially coding in a functional language, and that's also the very egoistic reason why I do this. Like, the next 10 years I want to spend working in spend my time working with functional programming languages rather than hacking away with mutable data. Yeah, I think organizing conference was compared to coding, it was a little bit out of our comfort zone. But on the other hand, I think the impact was super valuable. And if I work on an open source project, I could have spent 120 hours working on an open source project built with Reason. And that would have been also quite fun. But I think in the end, I feel comfortable that spending these 120 hours actually in organizing the conference and doing it for free was a better investment for the future. It's not only about coding, it's also about community and building community. That was important to us.
I was going to say that's definitely a valuable skill. I mean, we laud the skill of coding a lot because code is at the core of what we're doing. But in order to support the code and support the community, we also need people who are good at people skills to be able to put together and coordinate teaching and things like that. So yeah, definitely way to put your skills to work for the good of the community.
Yeah. Yeah. I can actually share some numbers. Yeah, so it was made as not-for-profit, which also some people did stuff for free for us. That was really helpful, and I think that's also why it was important to us to not switch it in between and say like, okay, oh, we might have some money left, and now we take that money for ourselves. I think we can next year we can do a different story. I don't know yet how we'll approach it, but basically we'll like the total cost were 27,000 euros, wow. And the total income was 35.
That's good.
Have about 8 left, and I mean we could split them now, but we all agreed we rather want to invest them in future stuff and Reason, and
that's great. Thanks for sharing that. That's really helpful. Those numbers are helpful to hear.
And if you want to organize a conference, like let's say you want to do ReasonConf Asia or ReasonConf US, I'm happy. Just ping Patrick, Andre, or me, and we can clean up the spreadsheet, anonymize it, and share all the details, like how much we spent on catering, how much we spent on venue, and how much the tickets income was, so you can get a rough feeling for like what you're signing up for if you want to do it.
That's awesome. That would actually be a great resource to put on that GitHub repo and readme or something like that. That'd be great.
Yeah, totally. I'm gonna do that. That's a good idea.
Awesome. Okay, so let's, in the like couple minutes we have left, did you have any particular lessons learned you wanted to highlight from the experience?
Patrick, anything comes to your mind?
Probably the first thing, we started out small and we didn't even plan to do catering, to be honest, because we didn't know how this will end up. And in the end, it bit us because suddenly we needed the information who is vegetarian and who is vegan and who is eating what. So always collect this information. And in the end, you have this information if you need it. And in the end, we could schedule it somehow. So we offered vegetarian food in the end for the conference day. So it was not a big deal. But these are just the small details you learn after you have done the mistake. And I'm not sure if it's even possible to write this on a list and people noticing it, because you will do this error and then you will never do it again.
Yeah.
It's like learning to ride a bike. You can't tell people how to do it. You got to do it yourself.
But these are things that are definitely go in the GitHub repo.
Yeah.
I have some notes on that. I mean, one thing there's also, so what we totally forgot is some people don't like to be on photographs, official ones.
Right.
So you can do different colors of lanyards. Like one is, for example, a light red and one is dark red. And then if you see that on a picture that was taken by one of your photographs, photographers, you can say, okay, this picture includes that person, so we're not going to show that picture. And that's completely fine. And that's how you respect the individual.
I like that. That's a good one.
I think one thing that we tried hard, and it's not really a lesson learned, but it was one of our goals, is like, don't compromise. I mean, at some point we felt like, the early birds sold really fast, and then for a long time we sold almost nothing in terms of tickets. And we got a little bit nervous again. It's like, oh my God, what do we do if we don't sell all these tickets? We have so much cost now. We thought about like, oh, we have a mailing list. Let's send out to all these people, buy a ticket now. Only so many left and so on. But then we sat together and we agreed on like, no, if I would get such an email, I would be annoyed. It would be spam to me. So we don't, that would create a bad experience for the conference. So let's not do it. We can go through other channels. We can make it, make it happen only by good experiences. And I think we did, and that was so taking care of details and then really like reminding yourself like two things. The team, the three, like it was the first time for me working with Patrick and Andre I mean, we do these meetups, but this is on another scale, and I have to say thanks, Patrick and Andre. This worked really well. The team is fantastic. And the second part is the community is fantastic, because we got so much help from so many people. That was really a place to execute on it.
Yeah. Love it. That's great. Thank you, Nick. Anything else, Patrick?
I think another good tip is to calculate a lower and upper bound of your budget. I think this helped a lot to keep sane in this whole mess, because if you have a lower bound, you're saying, okay, in the worst case, we cut down on this cost, on this catering, on this whatever, and you're still in the black numbers. And this gives you a lot of confidence. And it's always a balance of keeping a balance of sanity and feeling comfortable with the money and keeping an overview over it. Together with having the right support of the community, of course. So if you plan to do this, try to keep this sanity budget somewhere so you can always scale up and down.
Love it. Great tip. So tell us a little bit about what you two are working on right now as we wrap up the show? Like, what are you doing, not conference related, but in your own reason or personal projects? Let's start with Nick.
Yeah, I can start. Or
go ahead.
Okay. So as I said, I'm currently working on integrating OCaml into NextJournal, and I think it's a very nice project because they have a very nice architecture to integrate REPLs in. So they have support from many different languages like Python, Julia, R, and whatnot. And they coupled it with a very nice Docker infrastructure. So every code cell you write is basically immutable. So you write some code, it evaluates it, and then it caches the state of the Docker image immutably. And this is it's like magic working in this. And it's they are hopefully going to launch somewhere in September, so people can openly access it. And I learned so much about the OCaml compiler. It's insane. It's you learn suddenly how to lex things and how to parse things and how to execute parsed code and how the reason compiler works or the reason parser and how they all fit together. And it's less complex than I thought, so it's manageable to dabble into it and understand it. That's my lesson learned in this one and a half weeks, actually. So I started from scratch in 1.5 weeks. I already got this kind of integrated. So this was great.
Wow, that's awesome. Way to go. That sounds super exciting. I hope you let us know when the product is released so that we can talk about it on the show and get people to go use it. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Nick?
Cool. Yeah, so for one part, as my day job or day to day is split between two things. A couple of days per week, I do like classic consulting, freelancing, give workshops. But the other thing is I record video courses because actually from these hackathons or hack sessions, we learned it's really hard to get I like the fact that a video course is a real convenient and fast way to onboard people. And so I did one actually on Egghead.io for a reason, just to get to know the language. There's nothing about it's only about the semantics. And I definitely want to do more there. So planning to work on do something, a course for BuckleScript, Reason React, also collecting some of advanced reason topics that could also be interesting. Probably by the end of the year, I should have two, three more courses on that cover reason. And for once, that's super fun for me. On the other hand, I learn a ton going into this, and I think probably one of the commits I'm most proud of is by dabbling into preparing for the course, I found some improvements I could make for the reason docs, and they were accepted, and that was pretty cool.
Woo!
Yeah,
that's great.
Awesome. Fun. Was a misunderstanding in the core team, and I discovered, hey, that doesn't make sense, and then corrected it, and he's like, oh yeah, we missed that one. And then it's like, ah, oh, awesome, wow. And then also one thing that I care about, and I saw your blog post for example recently, is that's probably my hobby project for the next 1 to 2 months. I want to create a ready to go or production ready setup where you can have a GraphQL backend with a reason compiled to native. And I was focusing a lot on AWS Lambda because that's what I worked with in the last couple of years a lot. But maybe Fargate is the right thing. And yeah, let's see. I just will play around with it for the next couple of months and want to give people a setup that would be but the goal is basically in 5 minutes, you should have something, and in 5 minutes, you should be ready to have a production-ready setup with everything you need.
Oh, that would be awesome. I have spent much, much more than 5 minutes in the past couple of weeks doing that same thing.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and I think that's important for if you can create not only a great developer experience, but also a great experience from zero to production, that's a very convincing way of choosing a technology.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we're going to certainly look forward to both of those things. I mean, I'm sitting here going, wow, these guys are so cool. I'm glad I just get to talk to you. So thank you for taking the time. Yeah. Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah. Thank you very much for having us.
And we're going to say a big thanks to Andre as well, even though he wasn't able to speak for himself here. But I'm sure that the two of you covered what he would have said very well. So thank you. And until next time, listeners, thanks for tuning in. Bye.
Bye.